Picture the scene. You're with a group of friends from work having dinner together. The meal's delicious. It's a three-course fine event. There's much laughter, jovial banter, stories being recounted. And then somehow, the conversation comes round to church, Jesus, and the church's view on same-sex relationships. And instead of speaking up, you go quiet, wishing the floor could swallow you up, wishing the conversation would move on as the discussion gets more animated and more heated. I mean, who do these Christians think they are? What fool would believe in a man who came 2,000 years ago to die for them? Suddenly, someone remembers that you're religious. You go to church, and all eyes look at you. Your mouth is dry, you feel your heart racing, and all you can think of to say is, yeah, some Christians are a bit full-on. Have you seen that new film? Oh, Bert, did you ever get to go to Thailand on that backpacking trip you wanted to? And the diversion works and the conversation goes off in a new direction. You, however, feel wretched. You know you should have said something. You know you should have said something more. You didn't grasp the opportunity before you. Somehow, you let Jesus down. Have you ever felt that way? Ever been in a similar situation? I guess if most of us have at some point. Maybe not exactly like that. Maybe not as intense. Maybe it was just a conversation with a friend in the coffee shop that you ducked. Or over a pint during the half-time interval. But you knew afterwards you should have said something. You should have said something more. You should have spoken about who Jesus was. You shouldn't have denied him in some way. That's why we can all relate to the passage before us this morning as we read of Peter's denial. But how do we avoid denying Jesus? Well, John sets it up for us in such a way as to contrast Jesus' response to questioning and Peter's response, in order that we may learn from Peter's mistakes whilst learning positively from Jesus' example. See, John sets a scene for us, verse 15. Jesus has been arrested, he's bound and taken to Annas the high priest. Simon Peter, verse 15, and another disciple, presumably John, follow. John is known to the high priest, we're told, and so goes right on in with Jesus into the high priest's courtyard. Not wanting to forget his friend Peter, he has a word with the girl guarding the gate, verse 16, and gets Peter into the courtyard as well, where seemingly Peter then stays whilst John, it seems, goes with Jesus into the interrogation. Which seems, by the way, in which John records it in verse 19, somewhere else. See, verse 19, meanwhile, i.e. elsewhere from the courtyard. And Luke's account tells us that Jesus was taken inside the high priest's house. And whilst Jesus is elsewhere with John, Peter waits in the courtyard and is asked a question, verse 17. You're not one of his disciples, are you? And the question is asked in such a way to elicit a no response. It's as if the girl could hardly believe that another of this man's disciples would dare follow him right into the high priest's courtyard. And Peter takes the easy way out and says, I am not, and goes and warms himself by the fire. And with that, John changes the camera angle and takes us to Jesus' first interrogation. And the contrast is now set. Peter is outside denying Jesus, concerned to protect himself as he is questioned. Jesus is inside being questioned. How will he respond? What will he do? And we'll see what Jesus does before we're taken back to Peter and to focus on his response. So firstly then, Jesus. Jesus protects and defends, verses 19 to 24. Jesus protects and defends. See, verse 19, meanwhile, the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. And Jesus immediately protects his disciples For in his answer, he does not talk of his disciples. It's as if he does not want to draw them into the discussion. And so he focuses his answer only on that of his teaching. He forgets, as it were, the question about his disciples. See verse 20, I have spoken openly to the world. I've always taught. And even when he encourages the high priest to go and speak to those who have listened to him, he doesn't say, go and ask my disciples, the most obvious choice, but ask those in the synagogue, in the temple, who have heard me, verse 21. Jesus is purposefully not mentioning his disciples. He's seeking to protect them. Just as he had in the garden, just as he prayed he would in John 17, just as was prophesied in verse 9, I have not lost one of those you gave me. See, Jesus protects his disciples, which is a great encouragement for us, because it must mean he'll protect us as well. See, because as we witness Jesus here in this trial, it should fill our hearts with joy and encouragement for that trial on that final day. See, think about it. If Jesus here is quick to protect his disciples, then on that final day before the judgment seat, we can be utterly assured he'll protect us, those who have placed their trust in his death and resurrection, from God's judgment. That in that final day, that final trial, he'll speak in our defense. He'll say, yes, they're mine. He'll look out for us, as it were. He'll fulfill his promise that none entrusted to him will be lost. He fulfills it here in this human court. He'll fulfill it there in God's court. Jesus protects us. But he's also an example to us. See, for as Jesus protects those entrusted to him, so we should protect those entrusted to us. Think about it. Here's Jesus in the midst of a trial, knowing that he's heading for his death. And he thinks of his disciples. He's concerned to protect them, to keep them out of the limelight. I wonder how good we are at protecting those we've been entrusted with. See, or are we like Peter, as we'll see in a minute, more concerned with self-protection, with ourselves? It's a stark lesson for those of us in leadership, be it in the church, be it in our families, be it with our children. Do we seek to protect those entrusted to us? Protecting them from untruths, guarding them against false teaching. Do we protect them by absorbing information they really do not need to hear, that will only upset them, hurt them if they did? Even though it means bearing it ourselves. Do we protect them by laying down our lives for them, literally, but also in serving them and caring for them and looking out for them and putting their interests first? Are we more concerned about them than us? Or are we like Peter, only concerned with ourselves? Jesus is other-centered, not himself-centered. Jesus is concerned to protect his disciples, not himself. But he also defends the truth of his teaching. He denies nothing. See verse 20, I have spoken openly. I've always taught where all the Jews gathered. I've said nothing in secret. It's not that he didn't teach his disciples privately, but what he taught them in private was consistent with what he taught them in public. Jesus is saying, look, there is nothing I'm ashamed of. There is nothing that I want to take back. There is nothing that I deny. There is nothing I deny in my teaching. And what does he taught primarily? Who he is and why he has come. Jesus is effectively saying, as he denies nothing in his teaching, he's saying, look, I am who I say I am. And you begin to think back through what he's been teaching in John. You think of his words where he said, I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the true vine. I am. I am God in the flesh, the one who is from the Father, the one who reveals the Father, the one who makes relationship with the Father possible. I and the Father are one. Jesus denies nothing. It's what I've been teaching openly. I've not done it in secret. He defends the truth. I am who I say I am. I am He. I am the one sent by God. I am God in the flesh. And he begins to demonstrate it by his actions as he stands up to his questioners. See verse 21. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I've said. And Jesus, by his questions, is beginning to show who is really in charge as he exposes this kangaroo court. So it was a kangaroo court. It was not really supposed to be happening. Trials never took place at night. That's why John mentions they needed a fire, verse 18. He's making the point. This was all done at night, all done in secrecy. Under Jewish law, trials at night were forbidden, as was questioning the defendant. Under Jewish law, you never question the defendant. You question witnesses. Just as Jesus is encouraging them to do. For which he gets a strike across the face, verse 22. Is this the way you answer the high priest? And immediately as we hear that, our minds go to where Paul in Acts 23, verse 5, speaks ill of the high priest unknowingly and immediately apologizes. But Jesus doesn't apologize. Because Jesus does not need to apologize. He's done nothing wrong. He's not spoken ill of the high priest. He's just asked a legitimate question following the norms of Jewish trials. See verse 23, if I've said something wrong, Jesus replied, testify as to what is wrong. But if I've spoken the truth, literally spoken what is right, why do you strike me? See, Jesus is fully in control, defending the truth, denying nothing, even as he's led off bound to Caiaphas. He's utterly in control, protecting his disciples, speaking the truth. And Jesus is again an example to us, isn't he? He stands firm in what he teaches. He's unashamed. He's quick to defend the truth. Are we? Think of that dinner party setting again. What particular truths would you hate to be raised? What is it when you're discussing with non-believers in particular that the one area of scripture that you don't want them to bring up, that you'd rather not talk about? See, are there scriptural truths you'd rather ignore, rather not speak about? So same-sex relationships and the Bible's stance. God's sovereignty and human responsibility. God's judgment and hell. Areas that you would rather not have in the open. Areas that you would rather not speak about. Oh, you know they exist, but you want to keep them out there. You don't want to have to think about them, and you certainly don't want to have to talk about them. But if they're there, and if they're what the Bible teaches, and if they're part of revealing who God is, then we don't really have a choice, do we? I mean, Jesus was unashamed. He denied nothing because he knew that what he taught to be truth. And he loved his Father and us, which meant that he was prepared to speak the hard truth to us. He was prepared to say that hell is real. It's a place for those who do not trust me. And he's prepared to say that he is the only way to be saved, so trust him. If it's true, and you love people, why would you be ashamed to tell them that? Surely it's more loving to warn than ignore. Surely it's more loving to reveal what God has spoken than to hide it. And if you love the Father like Jesus, then not only will you want to be obedient to him like Jesus, but you'll want to reveal him like Jesus, teaching all of his truth, not just parts of it. And if we love the Father, and we know who he is, then we know that what he has revealed in his word is the truth. So why be ashamed of it? Defend the truth. Deny nothing. Jesus protects and defends. And whilst Jesus is protecting and defending, secondly, Peter cowers and denies. Verse 25 to 27. Peter cowers and denies. See, as Jesus is seeking to protect his disciples and denies nothing, Peter is self-protecting and denies everything. Whereas Jesus declares in verse 5 and verse 8 of chapter 18, I am he, Peter declares, verse 17 and verse 25, I am not. And whereas Jesus seeks to protect the disciples, Peter is only interested in self-protection. Not in protecting Jesus' name, not in protecting Jesus' honour, but only in protecting himself. Fearing, it seems, those around the fire with him. This disciple, who only hours earlier had declared chapter 13, I will lay down my life for you, now refuses to be known as his. This same disciple, who had literally minutes before risen up in defense of Jesus, striking a servant's ear off, 18 verse 10, now fears the servant's relative, verse 26. See, the question is, how can one fall so quickly? How can one deny Jesus so fast? How does it happen? How do you become one who is cowering and denying, literally within hours? Well, firstly, you remove yourself from Jesus' presence. See, note what John writes. Verse 15 and 16. He enables Peter to enter the courtyard, but Peter, for whatever reason, does not go to be with Jesus where he is being tried, but hangs back in the courtyard. And I think we're meant to see it, this was a choice. See, John doesn't recall that Peter could go no further. He's recorded that once, he's already said that Peter had to wait outside the door in the courtyard. John doesn't recall that he couldn't go any further. And the implication of the text, as we've seen with verse 19, the meanwhile is that Jesus was tried elsewhere, and John was with him, but Peter wasn't. So why does Peter hang back? Well, Luke gives us a bit of a clue. He recalls that Peter was following from a distance. It's as if Peter's close enough to Jesus to separate him from those who had abandoned their Lord, but he's not so close that he is identified as a disciple like John. He's close enough to the action, but not quite there. He's hanging back. And the danger of removing yourself from Jesus' presence soon becomes apparent. You see, in verse 10, with Jesus beside him, Peter is prepared to fight an army. But verse 17, no longer with Jesus, a servant girl asks, you're not one of his disciples, are you? And he denies quickly. See, the danger of removing oneself from Jesus' presence is that one is removing oneself from the source of our strength, our comfort, and our courage. See, imagine had Peter gone in with Jesus and he'd heard Jesus, and he'd heard Jesus' words protecting him and defending the truth. He would have never denied Jesus. But outside alone, Peter couldn't hear Jesus' words. He couldn't hear the words of the one who had called him. He couldn't hear the voice of the one who had commanded him to walk on water with him. And with Jesus' presence, as it were, removed, all it takes is a servant girl to ask a simple question, and he quickly shuns Jesus. If you don't want to deny Jesus, then you need to stay close to Jesus. And yet how easy it is to stop listening to Jesus like Peter did and to remove ourselves from his presence. to a place where we stop listening to him, stop hearing his strengthening words, stop hearing his words of encouragement to keep going, his words of comfort in the midst of trials, and we stop being shaped and molded by him and his words, and instead we begin to be molded and shaped by something else. And that something else begins to pull us away. And there are many things that begin to pull us away from Jesus, from spending time listening to him through his word. And these things, more often than not, are good things that have become a God thing. Be it our children, be it our work, be it our business, be it our desire to provide for our family, for our retirement, for our security. And they so consume us that we stop spending time with Jesus, we stop listening to him, so we stop reading our Bibles. We stop attending midweek prayer meetings. We stop attending house group. We stop attending on a Sunday evening when we once did. And now even Sunday mornings can begin to be missed for the sake of the other. And slowly but surely, we remove ourselves from his presence until before long we will find ourselves in a situation where we'll quickly deny Jesus, where we'll shun him as if he had never known, just like Peter did. Because we're no longer close to him. Maybe things haven't got that bad. Maybe you're still attending, but you're just hanging back, not quite engaging, or hearing the words, even reading the words of Scripture, but not engaging with the words of Scripture, not really listening, not allowing them to shape you and mold you, just going through the process. And effectively, you stop listening to Jesus. You've begun to hang back. You're effectively in that courtyard. You're close enough to the action, but not quite close enough. And the lesson from Peter is this. If you're not with Jesus, then you'll be quick to deny Jesus. See, removing yourself from his presence is one side of the coin. But by removing yourself from Jesus means you're putting yourself closer to an alien world. It's the other side of the coin. See, to not be close to Jesus must mean one is close to the world. To be close to Jesus must mean, to be close to Jesus must mean one is not close to the world. See, it's not that we're not to be in the world or to engage in the world, but we're not to be those who love the world and align ourselves with the world. And look what happens to Peter when he removes himself from Jesus' presence, when he hangs back. Verse 18, it was cold, and the servants and the officials stood around a fire they had made to keep warm. Peter also was standing with them, warming himself. And John makes the comment, verse 15, how they had both been following Jesus, been with him, and now Peter is standing with them by the fire. You can't blame Peter for wanting to warm himself by the fire, but John could have just written that. He could have just written, Peter also was standing warming himself, if that had been the case. But John doesn't. He writes with them. Peter, as it were, was aligning himself with them. To not be exposed, to fit in with the world, to be, as it were, amongst the crowd. See it again in verse 26, when the final challenge comes. Didn't I see you with him? The implication, you were with him, but you're not now. And Peter denies being with Jesus in order to be with them. To fit in. And the thing with aligning yourself with the world is you begin to fear the world. And you fear what it will say. And you fear what it will do. So you're quick to deny Christ in order to protect yourself. See, Peter feared them, supposing them to be hostile. After all, John does write, verse 26, that one of the people challenging him was a relative of the man whose ear Peter had just lopped off. Maybe it was fear of a general hostile response that Peter feared. But maybe they were just curious and would have had nothing of it and would have made nothing of it if he had told them the truth. But whatever the motive of the people in asking Peter, it's Peter's response that is key. And Peter, distanced from Christ and now in among the alien world, is filled with fear. And instantly we recognize ourselves. Like us, he fears their opinion. He fears the power that he imagines them to have. He fears that maybe they'll do the same to him as they're doing to Jesus. And when Peter's fear comes to the surface, we see, as it were, the meringue starting to crack, just as ours would. And his fear reveals his insecurities, his weakness and self-protection kicks in and he denies Jesus. Just as our fear reveals our insecurities and our weakness so that our self-protection kicks in and we deny. Just like at that dinner party we started with. It's the fear of what others think. It's the fear of being on the outside. It's the fear of not being accepted that prevents us from speaking. You see, instead of fearing Christ and his ways, Peter, like us, fears the world and its. And instead of trusting Christ to protect him, like Peter, like us, trusts himself. And he denies Christ. And he denies that Christ is able to care for him and protect him. And so he denies in order to protect himself to be part of the gang and not feel the pain that might come with that. And ironically, at the moment that Peter is denying Christ and denying his protection, as it were, is the very moment that Jesus is inside protecting his disciples. Just pause and think how foolish it is to deny Christ and his protection. To deny Christ and fear the world. I mean, think about it. Who would you rather trust to protect you? The King of Kings, the one who has all authority and power over all things, or yourself, who has power and authority maybe over a few, but in reality, none? Who would you rather fear? The one who has power and authority over all things, or a few in this world? But then fear feeds irrational choices. See, had Peter remained with Christ next to him, hearing Christ's words, he would not have feared the world but Christ. And he would not have denied Christ because he would have trusted Christ to protect him as he heard Christ's words. If you think about it rationally, what can the world do if you are Christ's who will protect you for eternity? But you see, once you remove yourself from Christ and you've aligned yourself with the world, Satan has you where he wants you. So that a gentle nudge, three simple questions, and you deny Christ. You turn your back on Jesus. If you don't want to deny Christ, stay close to him, align yourself with him and his protection, not the world, and self-protection. So that when that dinner situation arises that we started with, and it will, if you want to stand firm, you have to be close to Jesus. You have to be walking with him. You have to be listening to him so that when that conversation turns, you're already trusting him to protect you. And so when that fear wells up inside you, you're able to remind yourself of the truth you have been hearing, of the comfort of the gospel, of the assurance of his protection. And the fear subsides. And now, like Jesus, not Peter, you're able to defend the truth, not deny the truth, secure in his protection and love. Who will you follow? Whose example will you meet? Will you look at Jesus and protect and defend his truth? Or will you be like Peter and cower and deny? Maybe this morning you're sensing that you're already, as it were, removing yourself from Christ's presence. You realize that something in your life is beginning to dominate it, that is hindering your relationship with Christ, that you're beginning to drift, that you're kind of just hanging on, as it were. You're just outside. Can I encourage you to do all you have to this morning to stay close with Him, to take the hard decisions, to align yourself with Him and not with the world, so that you don't drift, so that you don't end up denying Christ, or worse, abandoning Him forever. Don't believe the lies of Satan that say you can't do it now. Don't believe the lies of Satan that say, oh, these decisions will come about in time, or that it's only for a while. No, do something about it today. Commit in your heart to do it today. Maybe this morning you're sensing you're not actually a believer. You call yourself a believer. You pray every now and then. You come to church. But what you're beginning to sense is you're not really with Jesus. You're hanging back. You're close enough to the action, but you're not quite with it. Maybe you fear the world. Maybe you fear your reputation being crushed. You fear the loss of independence or not being able to do what you want when you want. But you also know, as Jesus says in verse 23, that He has spoken the truth. That what He says is right. And so I could change that question in verse 23 to fit you, couldn't I? If I've spoken the truth, why do you not follow me? Why do you not trust me? You know I'm a good shepherd. You know I'm the best way to live. Why do you not follow me? Why do you not trust me to protect you? Why do you not defend my truth? Why do you go on cowering and denying, even though you know who I am? Who will you follow this morning?